Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:03 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is March 4th. Well, Treasury yields popped on the upside again in here today. So Jay Powell was speaking and he refrained from giving any kind of assistance to the bond markets. So investors took that as a signal that yields would have to rise further before the Federal Reserve is really going to do anything at all to assist the markets. Well, it's pretty easy to understand why the Fed wouldn't do anything at present times. Even though the yield has moved in a meaningful manner, the S&P 500 has only just begun to feel the ill effects, and it was off the lows in here today. It's only down about 4% from the all-time high, and it would be extraordinarily unusual for the Federal Reserve to intervene at this stage, because why would they? The stock market is one of the biggest barometers they have for the success of their operations. And when the stock market has been doing so well, then there is no particular need for intervention. But when they haven't intervened and the stock market would like them to, well, the NASDAQ, for example, is pulling back more than the S&P 500 because it is more heavily influenced by interest rates. I think this chart of the value ETF divided by the growth or large cap growth ETF is rather instructive, because it has now popped on the upside for the first time since the end of 2018. We got to think back to 2018. What was it that everyone was worried about? Well, it was that yields were about to break on the upside. We were about to have a return to inflation. Treasury yields were cruising through 3%. And there had been this problem in the repo market, and that also represented a time when liquidity was in question. So this is not all that different. There is illiquidity in the repo market. The repo on the 10-year yield went to a negative 4% towards the close yesterday. Well, and that's not something that I've ever looked at before today. Any time I've ever looked at repo, it was for shorter term instruments. And I don't think many other people look at the repo on the 10-year either. But the reality is that with the Fed funds rate close to zero, the fail rate is usually 300 basis points below the Fed funds rate. And it was exceeded for the first time ever by the repo rate yesterday. That tells us that there's a lot of shorts that were rolling over their positions in the bond markets. And then there was the additional point, of course, that the repo market is not nearly as liquid as people might hope it to be. And the treasury market's not especially liquid either. And those are very similar types of conditions to what we had with the repo market back in 2018. So it is interesting that value is also popping on the upside now in just the same way that it did in 2018. Now, back then, we had this massive infusion of liquidity. The Federal Reserve added $450 billion in the space of just 24 hours to support the repo market, and it worked. And the net effect of that was to signal that there was going to be additional assistance measures provided to the market. So then we had this spread starting to contract again, and growth stocks took off once more. So obviously, in order for growth to now return to outperformance, we would definitely need to see yields starting to come back down, additional liquidity being provided at both the short and the long end of the curve. And it's not all that unlikely that that's going to happen. It's really only a question of how much the stock market have to pull back before we're going to see that kind of activity. I'm looking at the spread as well between the 10-year and the S&P 500, because right now it's close to zero. So there is no yield pickup between equities and bonds. In fact, it moved to positive territory towards the close in here today. And one thing I find especially interesting is that Lows in this market have in this spread have generally been consistent with market lows, and peaks for the spread have generally been, and definitely in 2018, were consistent with peaks in the stock market. Well, this spread has a lot of back history, and it doesn't always work. The peak in 2014 was not a major market top, but one thing we can also think about is that the spread bears a striking resemblance with the curve, or excuse me, with the yield that we have on the 10-year yield. The higher yields go, the less attractive equities become as a yield haven. Well, of course, then investors will start to focus on the companies that have got a competitive yield. So the other big thing that happened in here today was oil prices popped on the upside. OPEC has decided that they're going to keep their supply curtailed. They want to support a higher price environment. They're certainly succeeding. The price is up to $67. But more importantly than that, when we look out to June 2022, the price is up to about $60 on the futures. So we are now back into a point where shale drillers can start drilling again, and they can hedge out their production to at least $60 for the next 15 months. Well, that pretty much means that drilling is going to restart, and it's going to come back with a bang as long as oil prices continue to rally, because they will simply hedge out their exposure to the price, and then they will produce as much as they possibly can. This is a clear example of what has been the defining characteristic of unconventional oil and gas supply over most of the last decade. It's elastic to price. So when prices fall, they stop drilling. When prices rise, they start. But the other side of that equation is that it is extremely capital intensive. So they are also heavily reliant on interest rates. So the big question, therefore, is will prices have to rise a little further from where they are right now in order to compensate the investor and to improve the hedge to allow for the bigger discount rate? So that is an additional short-term bullish factor, that it might prolong the time before we get a big upsurge in drilling. But the higher prices go, the more drilling that will take place. There is certainly a cause and effect relationship in there. So the big takeaway is we have elastic supply, but it's dependent on price and interest rates. The interest rate component of that consideration has been completely irrelevant for most of the last few years, because interest rates have been close to zero, and now we've seen that yields have popped on the upside. But it is worth considering that when we think about where the risks are, well, they're mostly in the sovereign sector. Governments are printing money like water. They are coming up with additional new spending programs. They are looking at massively increasing the quantity of money that they want to spend over the balance of the next couple of years. They're looking at economic recovery, revival, getting people back to work, new green initiatives. And there seems to be ideas abounding for how to spend money. Very few ideas about how to raise money other than simply borrow it. And that's the big question here, because when we look at high yield spreads, they are still extremely low and contracted somewhat yesterday. When, of course, we think about just the nominal price of a high yield ETF, it's a little weaker, but certainly not coming back in any way like the sovereign bond futures. The treasury bond is now clearly trending downwards. It has broken down from this rather inert phase. It's a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. If stock markets do continue to contract, well, then we are likely to see yields continue to rise. It also means that the Federal Reserve is getting lots of firepower. we know that there is a big short position because of that effect that the short positions had on the repo rate. So the Federal Reserve is giving the market enough rope to hang itself, and they will intervene if there is a risk to the recovery. And when we think about some of the most highly levered companies, well, Tesla is certainly one of those, and it was down again in here today, so it has now come back by a third in the space of the last 6 weeks. I did highlight the chart for Nvidia yesterday, and it is now right in the region of the trend mean and at a new reaction low over the course of the last 6 months. And this does look like a type 2 top formation. Amazon is also right in the region of its trend mean and is in the region of its lows. So it closed below the psychological 3000 level in here today. It's going to have to rebound and do so in a dynamic manner in order to question the potential that we're going to see additional downside. These are extremely large companies. They represent a very large weighting in the NASDAQ 100 as well as the S&P 500. When we then just simply look at those shares, the NYSE FANG index has also pulled back in a dynamic manner over the last 2 weeks. We have not seen a pullback with dynamics back-to-back like this since March of last year. So certainly there is some risk coming out of the highly valued sectors. And I think that is also beginning to weigh on Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was down nearly $3,000 in here today. And I think the big takeaway is that we have institutional investors standing up and making very bullish comments and saying how much they like it and how this is a new paradigm and how there is a wonderful future for cryptocurrencies. And what it really suggests is that they're talking their book and that they've already bought. But in order for prices to be sustained and to continue to move higher, you need to have new buyers coming in. Well, the big thing about the cryptocurrency markets is that retail buyers were the ones who drove it higher in the first place, and it is institutional buyers are the latecomers. This is the exact opposite of what we see in other markets, where it's usually institutional buyers are the early buyers, and then it's retail investors being encouraged to enter the market is what signals peaky activity. So I do wonder whether it is the introduction of institutional investors, and we have to think that if you are an institution and you wanted to buy Bitcoin and you were interested in buying Bitcoin, well, you had lots of support for doing that from the institutional community over the course of the last 3 or 4 months. Well, you've probably initiated at least some positions. And there is the potential here that we could see some greater volatility. I did highlight yesterday that Bitcoin has been doing well, at least in part because of expectations that there will be an ETF, and that by allowing an ETF, then that would it would open an additional avenue for retail investors who are less tech savvy to simply go out and buy the Bitcoin vehicle. So obviously, if people believed that that was likely, then they would buy Bitcoin in advance of that development. It is, I think, worth considering that this is not the first time we've had this argument. And the Winklevoss twins tried to launch a Bitcoin ETF back in 2017. They failed. They failed because it was an unregulated market and deemed to be too risky for retail investors. I don't really know what's changed since then. It's still a completely unregulated market. And if the SEC is still thinking along the same lines as they did 4 years ago, then an ETF will not be permissioned. Of course, institutions being more active in the market is the different characteristic than what we had back then. So it has been lent some form of legitimacy by institutions starting to play a greater part. But nonetheless, there are risks here. Now, we still have a consistent trend. We still have ranges one above another. And really, that low that was put in 4 weeks ago, right in the region of 43,000, will have to hold if we're still in a bull market environment. But I do think that the risk has increased substantially. When we think about the Ethereum market, it was also down in here today. It hasn't rebounded as impressively as Bitcoin has. It did dip down into the underlying trading range, and it was down a bit in here. I think it's, I sold mine. I think that there's the potential here that we could have a greater or a larger pullback overall. There's an incredible amount of enthusiasm about cryptocurrencies, and people need less convincing this time than they did last time. So more money has been put into the market in a very short period of time than was in 2017, because everybody know what happened last time. So perhaps I'm just much more wary about the cryptocurrency sector now than I had been just a week ago. And then when we think about the gold price, well, it was down $12 today and closed below 1700. So we're still in this corrective phase. At the $1,900-$1,800 levels had been areas of support, and subsequently rallies of about $100 were normal. We haven't had a $100 rally in this on this occasion, at least not yet. So we may be looking at an acceleration of the trend. Now, when we think about, well, what is it that could help to reverse the trend? Well, if stock markets continue to pull back, then we will see additional profit taking in precious metals. That wouldn't be unexpected. It is likely, though, that when monetary policy starts to ease again, then gold would take off and rebound faster than the stock market. That would also be true to form. When we think about the gold miners sector, it's come all the way right back down to test that $30 area, which is the upper side of the 6.5-year base formation. So I think that is another important point, that this could still be a first step above the base. It's an ideal area where support might be found. So I think gold is now looking a lot more interesting than it has done in a while, because I very much still of the opinion that yield curve control is inevitable. It is really only a question of at what point will it be introduced. The Federal Reserve has said clearly that they are sanguine about yields, but what they're really saying is they're sanguine about the stock market. And if the stock market pulls back by 10%, much less if it were to pull back by 20%, then we would certainly see clear efforts to try and bring yields back down. The degree to which the best performers over the last 18 months are to interest rates, I don't believe it can be more more emphasized. When we think about the performance of the ESG sector, that's the environmental, social, and governance sector, then it's heavily dependent on the solar and wind and renewable energy sectors, the innovation sector, the fact that the ARK ETF has been pulling back and money getting taken out of it, that the NASDAQ has erased its gains for the year. This is a clear pullback from the innovation ETF, and it has clearly broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. It accelerated on the upside, and now it is accelerating on the downside. Obviously, I think people will be hoping that it finds support in the region of the trend mean, but there is no getting around the fact that this is a massive inconsistency. Then when we think about the SPAC index, it has also pulled back in a violent manner. It has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. And Then when we think about IPOs as well, they have been doing spectacularly well, but the interest rate sensitivity of these markets is something that I've been banging on about for the last few months, but I think now we're starting to see clear evidence of that fact. As yields start to back up, then it reintroduces a discount rate. And when you reintroduce a discount rate, it's beneficial for value investors because suddenly they have a concrete level against which to compare their measure of value. But the absence of a discount rate is exactly what helps to promote growth, because they don't have anything else to compare it with so that they can come up with fantastic and wonderful expectations for what future growth will look like. It's when you reintroduce the discount rate that some of those valuations start to come back down to earth, and that reliance on abundant, cheap liquidity is obviously something that we need to now start to think about, because yields are rising. And of course, this is not a US phenomenon alone. The Chinese CSI 300 pushed down to a new reaction low in here today. So we're starting to see that some profit taking is underway and potentially a reversion back down to the mean. The fact that the dollar is starting to steady in the absence of additional liquidity from the Federal Reserve, it suggests that we're at least going to see a reversion to the mean. But I rather question how much further it's going to go, simply because the sheer quantity of debt that needs to be issued and sold is just going to massively increase the supply of dollars. And often currencies just come down to supply and demand. There was a very large earthquake off the coast of New Zealand about an hour ago. There are tsunami warnings in effect, so that does also represent a risk parameter, potentially for New Zealand, also potentially for Hawaii. The New Zealand stock market has been right in the region of its trend mean. It's testing the upper side of the underlying trading range as well, so it would be ideal if it could find support in this area. The rebound we've had in the New Zealand currency, it does look like we're going to see a reversion back down towards the mean. Having retested that 75 cents level, we're probably due some consolidation. The other market where we've certainly got evidence of consolidation is copper. And the copper price was down in a dynamic manner again in here today. So this does look increasingly like a process of consolidation overall. I do, however, think that copper is in a new secular bull market, that it will be a buy on the dips. The plans for spending all over the world are for renewable energy infrastructure and green technology, and that is completely dependent on availability of copper. So the copper has more of a secular tailwind than oil does. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.